You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. During this interview, I'm talking with Representative Scott Krug on Friday, February 6th. Thank you for joining me, Scott, to bring the community an update from the 72nd Assembly District.
Yeah, always happy to do it. So happy to dive right in and talk about the things that are going on.
Excellent. Well, earlier this week, you were invited to attend and answer questions about election bills that you've been working on. And this happened during a nonpartisan monthly social group that meets to talk about politics and current events at McMillan Library. There were around 50 people in attendance, from what I heard. And while this wasn't exactly a town hall meeting, it was kind of along those lines. People submitted questions on note cards and there was a moderator. Can you tell us about the evening?
Yeah, I mean, it's always a good opportunity to get to, you know, talk to people where they're at. So rushed home from Madison the other evening and got to McMillan for an evening session that we anticipated being a 15-minute, just tell everybody what's going on with the elections, but ended up staying for about an hour and 15, just answering questions not only on elections, but anything and everything else. It just kind of opened up the floor, gave everybody a chance to ask a question, take a shot, voice frustrations, whatever it might be. And I think in the end, I think we all walked away from it understanding each other better and letting people know that, you know, if you've got questions, it's always best to go to the source and maybe not depend on what you saw on Facebook.
Were there any election-related questions that stood out to you that came from the public there?
Yeah, I mean, it just happened to be during a week of conversations that President Trump had kind of thrown some things out that, you know, he talked about maybe at some point trying to nationalize elections. So people, you know, when you see these things in the news, it kind of sticks in your head. And I think people tried to relate the bills that we do in Wisconsin that are bipartisan with the comments that are made by the president and trying to help people understand that, you know, there's no way that the federal government is going to take over Wisconsin elections. I'm not there. The legislature's not there. The governor's certainly not there. So I think trying to help people understand what we do here is a lot different than what you might hear out of Washington took up a lot of that time that evening.
Okay. Because him saying that he wants to nationalize voting, that directly contradicts the Constitution, which gives states the power to run elections.
Yeah, that tricky little thing, you know, I mean, and that's why I think people just needed to take words for what they are sometimes. And, you know, I think actions speak louder. And I know that, you know, as we manage elections in the state of Wisconsin, there's always things that we can fix. But 99% of the time, our election process here works perfectly. So there are always going to be hiccups. People fought back saying that there's no fraud and there's none of these things. And, you know, I tell people this all the time, like, every election, everywhere in the world, there's always going to be somebody somewhere, somehow, that finds a way to vote that shouldn't. So to say there's nothing wrong is not true. But to also, on the other side, say it's a wide-scale conspiracy definitely is not true either. So I always try to help people understand exactly what that word means, because it gets thrown around a lot. But there are cases of fraudulent voters in Wisconsin that do get prosecuted. And my goal always is to tell people, like, it's just a matter of what our tolerance level is for it. Do we allow 0.0001%, or do we keep trying to get us down to zero? And that's all we've been up to since I took over this, you know, this issue area, is try to just get it as close to zero as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm. Well, based on what you heard that evening, and then also just what is coming out of Washington, are there any conversations happening with Wisconsin Republicans reacting to the president's statements?
Yeah, I pointed out to the group, and to be fair to the group, not exactly a nonpartisan group, but I understood their frustrations and their directions on things. But even pointed out to them that even Senator Ron Johnson stood up to Trump's comments saying, hey, it's not going to happen. You know, we're not going to do this in Wisconsin. So if Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin, both of our federal U.S. senators, are saying it's not going to happen, I think there's plenty of voices in Washington that are even calm enough to say, hey, just take words for what they are. But, you know, you do what you have to do in Wisconsin to manage it under state law. And that's what we're going to continue to do.
Okay. And then what about the comments that he is maybe planning to have ICE agents at voting locations? Do you have concerns about that?
No, I don't. Again, it's more words than anything else. And we did have a decent conversation about ice and related issues that evening too, and trying to help people understand who may have the connotation that this is a new federal agency, that they've not been in our communities before. I mean, my experience from even working at the Wood County Jail back in the late 90s and early 2000s, we've always had conversations and interactions with ICE. They're a lot different now than they were before, and some of the tactics are definitely different, but trying to help people just kind of sort through fiction and reality and what ICE is, and describe that, nobody should die over federal immigration policy. But I think both sides needed to take a step back and reassess. So, the conversations ongoing between Governor Walz and the Trump administration have been looking pretty fruitful this last week, that we can kind of tone down rhetoric and tone down physical violence and just get back to actually doing the things that matter in each of our own states.
And then also, what about holding ICE agents to the rules that they are supposed to follow in their job, such as saying who they are, having their badge number displayed, their last name, not covering their faces?
Yeah, absolutely. Get a lot of constituent contacts about that and saying, what are we going to do about that? And my answer, especially here in Wisconsin, is we've got great prosecutors in every one of our counties. That is their job to make sure that rules are being followed and implemented, and when they're not, to actually take charge and charge individuals who are not following the law. So I think it's very important that people understand that it's not just politicians who have say over what happens in our communities, but local police, local prosecutors, local judges play a crucial role in making sure that the rule of law is upheld.
Well, let's go back to the election bills that you've been working on a little bit more. What are you hoping? Because I know we've talked about the election bills in depth in other interviews we've done, but what are you hoping will still pass yet this session?
Yeah, I think the one that probably has the most legs, that we call it, would be the early voting hours bill.
Okay.
So right now, the larger communities of the state are all able to offer 80 or 100 or even more hours of early voting access during the 2 weeks of in-person absentee voting in Wisconsin. Most of our small municipalities that I represent don't necessarily offer any, but do offer the ability to vote by appointment. So looking this session to set a floor of minimum hours for everybody to be available in their clerk's offices seems to be the one that's got the best chance right now.
And that really, I think, would just make voting more accessible.
Yeah, and that's what we always had the conversations with the governor's office about, is that he is going to be willing to sign bills that make voting more accessible, that expand opportunities for individuals. And I think this is one that does that, especially in rural areas of the state, where requiring a clerk to be in an office for 5 hours during 2 weeks is not overly cumbersome for anybody, but still doesn't make anybody have to ask permission to exercise their right to vote absentee in person.
Right. And announces those hours or publishes them somewhere where the voters have accessibility to know when the
Yeah.
voting hours are
Yeah. So
available.
every cycle, every election cycle, the clerks are required to post what they call a Type E notice in local newspapers and other avenues. So those hours would be, have to be re required to be posted, so everybody knows what those hours would be. And it doesn't, and it does not proclaim, doesn't keep clerks from doing the by appointment either. But it just says that you have to at least have some in-person hours where you're actually in the seat, actually in the room, and somebody can just walk in and cast a ballot.
And the same election process happens in those early voting hours as it would on election day. Is that correct?
It's a little bit different, right? So absentee voting in the state of Wisconsin, when you cast an in-person absentee ballot, it's different than an election day ballot where it goes straight into a machine for processing and tallying. So when you go to vote in person in your clerk's office, it's a little bit different of a process where you're actually completing the absentee ballot that the clerk holds until election day. And under state law, we can't start processing those until election day in the state of Wisconsin.
But the same like checks are in place. They have to show their
Yeah,
photo ID, you have to
the
make sure you're
same,
on
yeah.
the voter roll.
Exactly. And that's something that we hear from folks concerned about Washington rhetoric sometimes is that Donald Trump talks about getting rid of mail-in voting. And some people think that we have mail-in voting in Wisconsin, but we don't. We have absentee by mail. Every absentee ballot, whether it's in person or whether it's through the mail, requires a photo identification, unless you're exempted in certain ways under state law. But 97% of all of those are required to have a photo ID accompanying, especially if it's an in-person vote.
Perfect. Well, let's pause here for a short moment to hear from our sponsors. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Representative Scott Krug, and you're listening to Perspective on 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR. You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. I'm speaking with Representative Scott Krug, and where we left off, we were talking in depth about election bills that you've been working on, election in the state of Wisconsin. Now I'd like to move into another topic that can get people fired up. Let's talk about taxes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There's Governor Tony Evers has been talking recently about the budget surplus, and he wants to do some things with property tax relief. What are you hearing?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that are pretty important to understand here is that when we talk about a budget surplus in the state of Wisconsin, that after planning for our state budget, taking care of the responsibilities that we agreed on that we can spend money on, to have a surplus means that we've collected too much money, right? So the best way to deal with this is to not let it sit in the state checking account, but to get it back to taxpayers who are facing affordability issues on everything nowadays. Mm-hmm. So the one thing I think everybody agrees on is that property tax relief is probably the best avenue. The legislature and the governor's office are in communications this week on the best way to deliver that. There's a few avenues. One, we could go the route of direct tax rebate checks. That's happened in the past before. It's not my favorite thing to do. It's a cumbersome process to figure out how to mail checks and get all that paper flowing everywhere, even though from a paper district. I'd still rather us figure out a way to do this differently. So I think the preferred option in the legislature is to apply this to the lottery tax credit in the state of Wisconsin, which gives you a rebate towards your overall tax bill. The reason I think the legislature is leaning towards the lottery tax credit is because this is something that only Wisconsin residents in their primary residence are able to receive. So if you're a second home owner or if you're a vacation home owner, you don't necessarily get the tax break that a Wisconsin primary resident property owner would get. That would make this relief even bigger, as opposed to putting it maybe in the school levy credit or other avenues on your tax bill. Mm-hmm. I think if we're going to do a property tax relief for Wisconsin residents, I think it should actually go to people who own properties and live in Wisconsin primarily. So the numbers we're talking about, the governor's talked about a $2 billion or $2.5 billion surplus, depending on which reporting you're looking at. I think to say that we can put all of that to property tax relief would ignore some other issues that we have, especially on healthcare or transportation or other issues. So we want to leave some money for some of those items as well. So I think the number we're going to look to agree to is about $1.3 to $1.4 billion overall. If it ends up in the lottery tax credit category, where I hope the legislature and the governor can agree, that is a significant, you know, for an average property owner in the state of Wisconsin, that is a significant amount, $300 to $400 for just an average valued home towards the skyrocketing property taxes that you're facing. So I think we can deliver some significant relief here for everybody who owns a property in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm. So my question as a renter, mm-hmm. because property tax is, you know, factored into the rent that I pay monthly, how will that work for, you know, people who own rental properties?
Yep, and that's what we're trying to figure out, a second avenue for a renter on your Wisconsin income tax return. There's that category right now that gives you that credit for the rent that you've paid to equal out some of the property tax burden that you face as a renter. So we're also looking at expanding that credit on your income tax return to be able to get you some of that relief as well without directly owning the property. You do contribute to the property tax, obviously. So the owner of the property would see it in the lottery tax credit if it's their primary residence, but if it's a rental building, they're not going to see that directly themselves. Whereas you, the renter, on your income tax bill could see some of that credit.
Okay. That's good to hear. And then when do you think that this has a possibility of coming into fruition or into effect?
Well, that kind of depends on where we're at. You know, right now it's February 6th. I think the legislative calendar has us in session until February 19th. If all goes well with negotiations this week, I'd anticipate seeing a bill in a committee next week and us taking those votes by February 19th in the State Assembly and the Senate voting on it mid-March, early March, whenever they come in.
Okay, so potentially by this summer, people
That's
could
when
start
everything
to
has to
see
be done.
something.
Yeah, I mean, if anything's going to happen, it's got to be done before the end of March because that's when the legislature's 2-year calendar expires. So we've got to
Okay.
have it all done by the end of March.
Well, let's continue on the subject of budgets here and talk about your budget topic of the week, this last email that you sent out, and the Wisconsin Technical College system, and that they you the there's a significant and strategic increase in funding for this system. How is that going to help students?
Yeah, I think our main goal here is to take as much burden off of the property tax bill as we possibly can. So we've started leaning towards more direct funding of the technical college system out of the state budget. And we keep increasing that every session to the point if you look at your if you look at the property tax bills that went out, the tax levy for the tech colleges keeps going down because we are making those targeted investments to that system, which in turn gives them more authority to spend it as they see fit to develop their own programs, to provide their social services. My ultimate goal here with the Wisconsin Technical College system is to make it as independent as we possibly can, so they can be as humanly as flexible as they need to be, because that is the ultimate flexibility in higher education is our technical college system that responds directly to the needs of the employers the minute that there is a need. So a new program can be created so we can fund, you know, buying down waiting lists for high demand programs and create more spots for individuals who want to get into a different program. So we're getting them the money they need to directly impact their own flexibility as quickly as they can.
And a lot of what technical colleges are able to do is partner with high school to offer dual enrollment programs so that when students graduate from high school, they're already entering the work or the college level with college credits. Do you see this and helping that as well?
It does. I mean, I've seen, maybe it was Wisconsin Rapids School District or one of my school districts that said there is actually a path right now that exists that a student can leave their high school education with an associate degree at the technical college level. Like, that's how much interaction there is in this process. And the more that that can happen, the less pressure there is on availability for spots for different classes in those campuses, gives them more flexibility, saves them some money, cranks out a better educated student who can have an associate degree upon graduation, who can go straight into a UW program from that point. That mobility is everything in education, especially in a fast-moving society like we have.
And the ability to, as you said, implement some of these different programs. I know that our Western Technical College here recently partnered with, I want to say it's Waukesha Tech, to develop an AI specialist degree that they're kicking off here this semester.
There are even programs out there at some of our tech colleges at this point that are specializing, like you mentioned, and not only just AI directly, but even in prompt engineering to be able to create effective uses of AI. And it's amazing how fast technology changes. When I first started in the legislature, it was a good 10 to 15 year process for a new technical college program to be created and up and functioning. And now it's year to year at this point. So we have to give them the ultimate flexibility and let them use their funding as they see fit and let their governing boards decide how to best do that.
Well, is there anything else that you want to share with our listeners, Representative Krug, before I let you go today?
Yeah, I would just say, if you're listening and you want more weekly direct information, I would subscribe to our e-update in our office, and it's very easy to do that. Just send us an email to rep.krug@legis, legis.wisconsin.gov, and just ask to subscribe. I mean, every week we get an e-update out for the most part, sometimes with videos, mostly with graphics, but you can know exactly what we're up to by just sending us an email, and we'll keep you updated.
And how can people contact you outside of that update?
Easiest way, this phone's always on. I mean, besides 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. is about the only time it ever turns off. So
I'm glad for you for that.
Oh, I know, I get 4 hours off, right? But the phone number is 715-323-3293. And besides that, people are always messaging me on Facebook or other socials too, and I see all those. That's why I start looking at those at 2 o'clock till 6 o'clock. So maybe there isn't any time off, but
Well, I very much appreciate you taking the time to speak with us today, Scott, representing the 72nd Assembly District. Thank you during this busy time that you took the time to talk with us today.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to an end of session wrap up soon.
All right. I'm Melissa Kaye, and also want to thank you to our listeners joining us for news in our community on Perspective 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR.